Get ready for a game changer. Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, Sarah will bring you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Now here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and you're listening to Conscious Business Radio on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Today, we have a really interesting program lined up. We have Jason Lewis, who is running for Congress, actually in my neck of the woods in Minnesota, in my District 2 here. Many people know him because he had a show for almost 3 decades, and it was nationally syndicated, and he was all over the country. And he was one of the most popular radio hosts, especially locally here. But he is a really bright guy. What I like about him is he's an independent thinker. And he is known to take on both the Democrats and the Republicans. He is running as a Republican. But he has an independent streak and he does what he thinks right. That's what I really like about him. We need that authentic, real voice in Congress. But he has been nailed with attack ads from his opponent. They were pretty brutal. And he's going to come on and explain what he really meant by the words they claimed he used. And he did use those words, but they took him so far out of context that it made him look like he was probably the biggest bigot in the country. You'll listen to him in his own words and what he had really meant by those words. And I got to tell you, I am so sick of this whole identity politics where people are made out to be bigots and extremists just simply because they have a different view on things. Now, there are really bigots out there, and we don't want them anywhere near Congress. But to claim that just because somebody has a different view on policies or they think the government should be run differently, to claim that they're bigots because of that, I think that's completely unacceptable, because what they're doing is they're creating division and they're making the problem much, much worse. Nobody can tell me that the Black community, the Asian community, the Hispanic community, everybody thinks like the Democrats when it comes to policy. The reason why they're on their side is because of the way they portray the other side as bigots. And they don't want to be anywhere near anybody that discriminates against them. That makes sense. But from a policy standpoint, I have a hard time believing they really all believe in the same policies as the Democrats. It just doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I got to tell you, I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent. I've been known to vote on both sides. But I got in this race because it's gotten so ugly. And I used to listen to him on the radio. I didn't see what these campaign ads were saying. So I had to bring him on and I had to ask him directly, what did he mean by this? And then I had to get into the important issues that we all should be voting for candidates for, not on attack ads, but what do they really believe in? We're going to talk about the Affordable Care Act and healthcare, the national debt, government corruption, which is actually the number one problem that Americans see today is government corruption. In fact, if there's corruption, you can't solve any of the other problems because government corruption keeps everything from being able to be solved or worked on. The Federal Reserve and perhaps our most serious national threat, we're going to talk about cybercrime and cyber warfare. But before we get into that, I had the opportunity to speak with Bradley Birkenfeld. He has a book that just came out called Lucifer's Bankers. He was a whistleblower. The UBS Swiss fraud, the tax fraud deal that happened about 4 years ago. And he has a book that just came out this week that is a tell-all of everything that went on. He's formerly a whistleblower. He was paid the most in U.S. history for any whistleblower, $104 million. So there's a big part of this government that really supported his activities, the SEC, the Senate, the IRS, they were all helping him and very supportive of his activities. Now, maybe they weren't at first, but they really did get on board once they saw what he actually had. the Justice Department, Obama, and the Hillary administration, well, Obama administration and Hillary as Secretary of State, were vicious to him. And he has a lot of inside information and a lot of very damning information on what actually happened. And so we're going to play right now a few clips from my interview that I am going to air next week. I'm actually going to make the podcast available this week since it's going to coincide with his book coming out. And then I'm going to air it next Monday. You'll be able to hear firsthand from him all the details on his on the details of his book. But it is available early on my website at sarahwestall.com if you want to hear it there as well. So here are a few clips from that interview.
Now, we've touched upon tax evasion and falsifying documents and things like that. That doesn't sound that bad in the big picture. Then we go into the second tier of problems. The second tier are things that are nefarious, such as the drug trade, arms smuggling, terrorist financing, prostitution, the slave trade, human trafficking.
So now, could they just obliterate a lot of those markets if they just went in and raided those tax and really dug into that? They could take over and break up human trafficking and break up terrorist funding and break up all these things that are destroying people's lives and the mass corruption. Could they really make huge inroads in that if they would simply go after this information?
Not only could they make a huge dent in it, but they had the golden opportunity through me to do it, and they failed. And they failed because some of their friends in high places are making big profits on selling arms. CIA is moving drug funds around the world. Yes, and I can tell you why. If your audience goes onto my website, lucifersbanker.com, and in there, there's on the headers, go under the case. And under the case, you should click on the scandal. And when you click on that, you'll see a news article showing the actual secret confidential cable, CIA cable, that shows that Hillary was having secret meetings with the Swiss, sent two Chinese Guantanamo detainees to Switzerland, closed the company in Denmark that was operating in Iran in exchange to settle the UBS case. There were some significant outcomes, but unfortunately, the bank wasn't fined properly, so the American taxpayer got cheated there. The bank didn't have to give up all 19,000 names. The American taxpayer got cheated again. The high executives in the bank all were given non-prosecution agreements and released, so the American taxpayer got screwed again. And that's the problem. Yes, did they recover monies? Billions of dollars, thanks to me. Nobody in America has brought more money back to this country than Brad Birkenfeld. Nobody.
So that's really interesting. And like I said, I will have that up on my website earlier, probably maybe Wednesday of this week, and maybe a little early. I'm going to try, see how quickly we can get that up there. And then it will air next Monday as well. So look for that. Now we're going to welcome Jason Lewis to the program. Hi, Jason. Welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Sarah.
Well, I need to talk to you about some of these attack ads. I used to listen to you on the radio quite a bit, and I never saw this perspective. But I know if you're on the radio for 3 hours a day, you're going to say things. So I want to know what you meant by some of these things in this attack ads. You said, well, you know, if you don't want to own a slave, don't. But don't tell other people they can't. How does somebody else owning a slave affect me? It doesn't. What did you really mean by that?
Yeah, it's really sad when somebody takes your words so out of context and so distorted. In fact, independent observers and a couple of television stations have pointed out the ads are deliberately misleading. That's what happens in politics these days. You know, they'll splice and dice, whether it's from a radio show or whether it's from a debate or whether it's talking to somebody on the street, to try to make the other candidate look as bad as possible. And it's very sad because it doesn't unite people. It doesn't display a positive vision.
It creates more problems is what I think it does.
I think people are tired of the scorched earth negative campaigning. It doesn't inform us how we're going to lower health insurance premiums in this epicenter of a health crisis here in Minnesota. So it's very, very disappointing to see that, but hardly surprising given who's funding my opponent, from George Soros to Nancy Pelosi to the DCCC. There's been millions of dollars spent on this because they don't want to talk about the issues that they're on the wrong side of. That particular line was actually a metaphor. It was an absurd quote to point out the absurdity of another point. And the issue, of course, wasn't abolition. The issue was what the Supreme Court should do or what the police powers of the state should be allowed to do. Can you pass a law whether it affects you directly or should you? And of course, we've got 300 years of common law nuisance that says, yeah, you pass all sorts of those laws. And other people say, well, wait a minute, if the law doesn't affect me, if it's a quote unquote consensual, why then a law shouldn't be passed? And I said, well, my gosh, where is that going to end? We shouldn't have laws against heroin. We shouldn't have laws against animal abuse. I own the property. That doesn't affect you. And if you really want to be absurd about it, you shouldn't have laws, you know, on the quote you used. Well, they took that absurdity and made it sound like a literal statement, which is
so. You were essentially saying this is an example of a law that needs to be there, and if we take it too far, so you were saying the opposite.
Of course,
it doesn't affect you, but the law still needs to be there.
That's right.
So you were saying the opposite, and so they used it in the opposite sense. And I think a lot of people saw that as obvious. Those kinds of things. I have a Hispanic family. My kids are Hispanic. My husband's Hispanic. So. I don't see that much discrimination, but occasionally you do see it. My daughter went through some last year. So there still exists, but it's not everywhere anymore. And people are much more aware, and I hate seeing this kind of stuff because it just makes what we're trying to solve it makes it polarized. It creates problems.
Well, it's divisive. It's deliberately divisive for political power. And it's been my experience and probably yours as well, Sarah, that those who will do and say anything to get power are just the ones who shouldn't be trusted with it.
Yeah, that's yeah. Okay, now how about this statement? Those women ignorant, they're simply ignorant of the important issues in life. Somebody's got to educate them. A vast majority of young single women who couldn't explain to you what GDP means. They care about abortion and gay marriage. They care about The View. They're non-thinking.
Well, of course, I was talking about liberal men and women who think that you ought to be compelled to pay for their lifestyle or their benefits. The debate there, as I recall, was about abortion and contraception. And my point was, well, regardless of whether you're pro-life or pro-choice, and I believe in contraception, of course, I think it ought to be sold over the counter, frankly. But that doesn't mean I believe I should force Sarah to pay for it. And so for a group of liberals to be so focused in and obsessed with being compassionate with other people's money, I just think it's non-thinking. I think that people who haven't thought things through enough. And so that's what that argument was about, again, taken out of context entirely. And it boiled down to the Hobby Lobby decision, where the Supreme Court, of course, agreed with me and said that, no, actually, if somebody has a religious objection, it's a sincerely held belief, and it's an undue hardship on their company, they don't have to provide those benefits because it offends their religious sensibilities embedded in the First Amendment. So what these people were really arguing against, as I say, liberal men and women, and this is why I believe they didn't think things through, is they were arguing against the First Amendment, which I hold near and dear. I made a living off it.
Well, exactly. Okay, well, and I also think that these are the issues that always come up so that we don't talk about some of the really, really big issues that we need to be talking about. And let's get into some of the
They don't want to talk about those issues. My opponent is on the wrong side of every single one of those issues. She was instrumental in bringing us the Affordable Care Act in Minnesota. And now it's bankrupting families. Our family's going through a real hard time with it. We've gone through three insurers. Our premiums have tripled. I had to sit down the whole family and say, here's what we're going to do. We may not have a very good health plan next year. This is an existential crisis. And my opponent, who was a lobbyist for her previous company, lobbied to get it passed, and then lobby to get her company exempt from Obamacare taxes. So if you're in that position where you are responsible for this disaster, that's the last thing you want to talk about.
Well, we have been hammered with it, my family as well. And I did a show on this a while ago, and just probably about 4 weeks ago. And I calculated what the compounded interest would be starting in 2014, the average based on the documented averages out there for Minnesota, and then also what it would be a through 2017, what they have published, and we would have had a compounded increase of 149%. So that means that if you would have kept your, most people didn't keep their stuff. They downgraded and lost a lot of coverage and did different things. But if you would have kept your stuff, that's how much. So if you had one for 500, it would cost you 1250 now.
Oh, and the drug formularies are becoming much more narrow. The copays and deductibles are much higher. It has been, and the Democrats own this, let's be honest. I mean, people like me were out there warning folks that this is not going to turn out well. And sadly, we were right. And so if you look at that issue, if you look at my opponent's endorsement from the Progressive Caucus, a band of 72 very uber radical left-wingers in Congress, if you look at her position on regulation and open borders, in fact, Hillary Clinton, of course, we now know, amongst other things, sadly, that she was telling privately these groups that she wants open borders. Well, my opponent agrees with that. So when you're on that side of all these issues, what do? You slash and burn and run a $5 million negative campaign. But I don't think it's working, Sarah. I ran into people in our 2030 parades this summer who said, just like you, you know, that's not the Jason Lewis I heard. And, you know, another thing, I'm getting tired of this. I'm getting tired of this constant negative bashing.
Well, I get angry when I see things that are just so out of context and so absurd, and then it creates the opposite of what you claim that you're about. I think it's hypocritical because it creates the opposite. But let's get back to this healthcare thing, because you know, it's a disaster, which we all know. Even Bill Clinton said it was. But yeah. There are 20 million people who are now insured that weren't before. That if we totally repealed it and didn't put something in place that took care of this, they would lose their insurance and pre-existing condition clause would be reinstated. What would you do in this kind of a scenario? What are your thoughts?
Well, remember, HIPAA bans discrimination based on pre-existing conditions. So if you've got your job at your employer and you go from one place to another, they can't drop your insurance. They've got to offer you insurance. So that's already in place and nobody's talking about that. And nobody's talking about just repealing without reform. I'm certainly not. But we all know that when you're talking about access, you're talking about access becoming less available. Let's be honest about this. Is it more access when you can't afford the premium, but say, well, at least it's offered to you, Sarah?
Yeah, well, it's ridiculous.
Bankrupting people and families and
business.
Well,
I think everybody with half a brain knows this is ludicrous and there needs to be something done. But there's a chart that I included, and it shows that the overhead costs and the administrative costs have gone up astronomically in the last two decades, whereas the number of physicians has pretty much stayed flat. So the problem is just our administrative and bogus expenses that have nothing to do with physicians working directly with patients.
Well, it's because, you know, we're in a nation of third-party payers, the biggest one being government. And they lay all of these rules and regulations on providers. And, of course, the Affordable Care Act had many, many more. But if you really want to get to the core, I believe, of the pre-existing crisis is the idea of employment-based insurance, where everybody gets insurance at work. They work for a place for 25, 30 years. They get sick or come down with diabetes. Then they get laid off. What happens to their insurance? They're not going from job to job where they can use COBRA in between. They get laid off. Now they're thrown into the individual market, for the first time with a pre-existing condition.
Yeah, now what happens?
That was the genesis of the crisis. So I believe in a wider reform that does a couple of things. You can reinstate high-risk pools, which were very successful in Minnesota. The Affordable Care Act banned 35 of those in 35 states. You can reinstate those. You can allow people who are sole proprietors, like I was in the last years of my radio show, to form pools so they can buy a group policy. But you need to also reform the tax code so individuals can deduct their medical expenses, not just corporations. And that happened back in the 50s and after World War II wage and price controls. So now if I can, say, work at a company and he says, well, I'm not going to pay you or provide you health care, but I'll pay a little more in cash. I take the cash, I buy my insurance, I own it like I own my homeowner's insurance or my automobile insurance. And then if I lose my job, I take my insurance with me. You repeal the mandates that are driving up the cost, the wellness benefits that most people don't use in the plan and a number of other things. And then, in fact, there's one that one particular cost that requires coverage for all sorts of things. A community rating cost is a big cost driver. You repeal those things, you get affordable plans that can be taken with you from job to job, and you solve a lot of that problem.
Well, and there's a group called The Wedge. I don't know if you've heard of that, where they are just getting out of all of managed care altogether. And it takes them a while to build up their clientele, but they are seeing 60, 70, up to 90% decreases in bills to their patients, and they're making about 60% more in profit. It's an incredible thing because they're getting rid of all the middlemen. It's an interesting phenomenon. There's about 140 clinics now in about 30 states that are joining into this thing.
Yeah, it's basically a cash-based policy. I think Twyla's leading that up, and I've been working with Twyla for 20 years now. But that may be the wave of the future, where people just opt out of the whole third-party payer system, and it goes to more of a catastrophic system where, you know what, I'm taking my son for his football physical. I'm going to pay the doctor. Yeah. I still have a check my dad wrote to my doctor when I was born. So.
Well, and that's what most people are doing anyways. If you have an HSA or if you have a high deductible, you're essentially feeling like you're doing that anyways, except you have
everybody
all this.
Everybody has a high deductible now.
Yeah, I know. Well, let's go ahead.
Other aspect here, too, is again, my opponent keeps talking in these euphemisms about integrative care, where we're paying providers for outcomes and not for services. That is code for managed care and rationing. Don't let anybody be fooled by that. If you don't pay a doctor for services, fee for service, you are paying him not to service you.
Exactly. It's terrible. And I know doctors, my sister's a doctor, and doctors are just fed up with this. It's a crisis with them too.
Yeah. And the answer from government is always to cut provider payments.
Yeah, I know. So they're struggling. I know the clinic she's working with is always in the negative, and they have to do other things that are not related to healthcare in order to stay afloat.
That's right. And you're going to get this critical mass here when you have fewer providers, doctors, nurses, clinics, and many more people demanding coverage. That's called queuing up. And there's another word for that, I believe.
Well, let's move on to government corruption. A recent poll showed that Americans' number one issue right now is government corruption. And based on all the stuff that's been coming up and the revelations that are coming out from WikiLeaks and other things, it's not surprising. Do you agree with the American people's view? And what do you think should be done?
Well, I mean, we know now what Hillary was up to. It's really quite astounding. It's essentially trading cash for diplomacy, getting money from corrupt governments that ironically in the WikiLeaks emails, Clinton knew were corrupt. They knew they knew Saudi Arabia, Qatar, all these countries that they were getting millions of dollars in cash from for their foundation were funding ISIS. They knew it. It's in an email. They know the Syrian refugees aren't vettable. It's in the emails. And yet they persist. They persist because it's enriching them. And that is a real problem in politics. You know, I like to say that the current system has been very good to my opponent, and it has, but it hasn't been too good to you. If you're an insider, there are really two Americas right now. We've got an economy that's I wouldn't say flatlining, but it's growing very, very slow at 1%, the slowest post-World War II recovery in history. And for the average small pass-through small business, a man or woman in the second district, it's very tough with the Affordable Care Act, with the regulatory onslaught, with a ridiculously complicated tax code. As you know, if you're a pass-through business, subchapter S, LLC, the revenue flows through to your 1040. Well, when you're talking about adding more rates to that in order to soak the rich, as my opponent suggests, well, then it just makes it more difficult because so much of that income is business income. But if you're a big corporation and you have K Street lobbyists and you're connected, you can get Obamacare passed, then you can get your industry exempt from the taxes. Life's pretty good, but that's good work if you can get it, but most of us can't. So I think that's the element of this corruption. There's an insider group. There's two Americas. And now, you know, the FBI director reopening this investigation, you wouldn't do that and wouldn't put yourself out there for this intense criticism unless they found something very, very significant that's going to come out. So we are on the precipice, Sarah, of electing the first president who will take the inauguration already under investigation. Unprecedented. And I don't think the country can go through it again.
Well, I think it's just so disappointing for so many people. And I think there's cognitive dissonance where people just won't accept it. I don't know if everybody sees all of it that way because they just won't believe it.
We need to take a short break and we'll be back in a moment.
Brand consultant Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help you take control of your future and maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you're an individual trying to reinvent yourself and launch a new venture, or you're an executive trying to reposition your company to modernize your sales and marketing programs, Jen Morgan and the RAD Method empower you to play to your strengths and show up in the world as your most powerful brand. To learn more, go to jenmorgan.com, that's Jen with two N's, Morgan.com, or call 206-9000. 972-5366.
What is a brilliant culture? And how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Were you hurt on the job or in a car accident and now struggling with pain? Shalom's Pharmacy can help. We work with you and your doctor to meet your specific needs. We also work with your doctor to keep you from developing an addiction. At Shalom's Pharmacy, we listen to your needs, get to know you, and provide the kind of personal advice that has a positive impact on your well-being. Shalom's Pharmacy, your partner in good health, located at 1106 Avenue K in Brooklyn, New York. Give us a call, 718-253-4900.
Welcome back to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall, and we are talking to Jason Lewis, who is running for Congress in my neck of the woods in Minnesota in District 2. And he is getting a ton of national publicity. They're calling him the mini Trump, which I disagree with. I think he's very different than Trump. But they're doing that on a national level because they're trying to smear him. And there is more money being poured into this congressional campaign than almost any other in the country. The Democrats, they really do not want him in office. And I think it's because he's an independent thinker and he's smart and he speaks well. And I think he can get in there and make a difference and be a leader. I think people will follow him. I think he'll be able to educate a lot of people in Congress. And listen to him talk. He's very educated on the issues. I don't hear many politicians be able to talk about the issues quite like him. Yeah, he needs to learn more about certain things, but who doesn't? He's very smart and he's very up on many of the issues. And I think it's a breath of fresh air. And we are going to get back to that interview now.
And I've personally seen corruption in my life. So it was very hard for me to deal with. And so I kind of am on the other side, and I think there's corruption that is pretty widespread, but I do think there's a lot of people that have a hard time accepting that it exists.
No, I disagree a little bit. I think there's some of that, but I also think there's a hardcore group of collectivists where the means justify, or the ends justify the means.
Like, and this level of corruption? Like people getting killed or people taking cash, you know, donations and things for doing whatever they want to have done in government?
Let's assume, for instance, that the emails, 30,000 plus emails, that essentially was an exercise in obstruction of justice. Let's assume that those were covering up the Libyan debacle, not just Benghazi, but the whole foray into Libya that so many of us warned against and that turned out to hand over the country to ISIS. And it was embarrassing for the administration, especially Secretary Clinton, if she wants to run for president. So they were trying to hide.
Well, there are some significant things we did. I mean, we claimed that we're going in for humanitarian reasons, and we purposely took out their water supply, which killed a lot of their crops, and a lot of people died. I mean, you can't go in for humanitarian reasons and then do things like that. But go ahead.
Yeah, that's right. And Gaddafi was trying to make overtures in the last few years, certainly during the Bush years, to America. So it was just an exercise in interventionism that liberals like. They like to intervene at home, so they like to intervene abroad. But let's say that the email cover-up was all about that. People don't care. They say, well, I don't care. I want Hillary, and I'll look past that. I want to preserve this program or that program or this Supreme Court ruling. That I don't care. The ends justify the means, and that's very dangerous, I think.
Yeah, I suppose that's kind of that. And that's part of always positioning the Republicans as a bunch of racist bigots. And so that has to go away. We have to just say, okay, we're not racist. We just believe that we can lift everybody up by doing this. And we're going to solve the mass incarceration problem because, you know, doing it this way. And there's so many issues that are hurting minorities that they're not helping with either.
Well, the single biggest problem in the minority community is lack of economic growth. There's no opportunity. You're stuck in a city or region or even rural poverty where the jobs, median household income is below what it was in 2007. The labor force participation rate hasn't been this low since the Carter era. The greatest way to lift up all people, whether they're Hispanic or African-American or males or females, is economic growth. And we don't have it. And we don't have it because of this command and control economy perpetrated by, and I would argue it's sort of a bipartisan problem at times, both parties, but especially acute during the last 8 years. So, yeah, I think you're right about that. But there's a reason, though, that liberal Democrats always go back to identity politics. It's the only thing they've got. So if you disagree with me, you don't just disagree. You've got to have ulterior motives. You must be a bigot. And that's, I think they're going to the well one time too often. I think people are smarter than that.
Well, we have to get past that because it can't be, okay, just because I believe in doing business differently doesn't not mean that I'm a bigot. And so I have to agree on all your ways of doing business. Otherwise, we're bigots. I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, it's intolerant, isn't it?
Well, it's just it's not fair. You're pigeonholed into a situation and say, they get to claim anything they want. We'll do anything we want. We get to manage government any way we want, because if you don't agree with me, then you're a bigot. It's like, well, and it's working to a certain degree, and that needs to stop, because we can't just be stuck with these policies, because that it doesn't make sense.
The NFIB pointed out that some of the mandates that are being proposed by the Democrats in Congress now on small business, and they sound so compassionate, and you know, it's paid this or paid that for not working, would cost 430,000 jobs and $650 billion in economic growth over the next 10 years. Now, how is that compassionate?
Exactly. That's my point. It's like, we can be more compassionate by really helping people have an opportunity. I mean, you don't help people by giving them handouts. You help them by learning how to fish themselves.
Well, you help people by making them independent. And we have
exactly.
A modern welfare state, whether it's corporate welfare or individual welfare, that relies on people staying dependent.
Well, I got to tell you that I, being a woman, I really would like to have a female president. I would like to just end that glass ceiling issue.
Mm-hmm.
But I really have a hard time with corruption. I mean, to me, corruption is, everyone suffers under corruption. If you don't get rid of corruption, you can't make anything work. It should be a completely bipartisan issue. Corruption should be ended, because no policy works with corruption.
Think about this. Hillary was taking money from foreign governments and now wants to lead the United States. You don't have to be a lawyer to see the inherent conflict of interest. And they weren't, above and beyond the fact, they weren't good foreign governments. That's immaterial. If you're taking tens of millions of dollars in foreign governments, from foreign governments, and you're getting appointments in the State Department, then you're covering up. How on earth is that going to be something that's going to instill confidence in the next presidency? It's a real crisis.
Well, I interviewed the whistleblower with that the Swiss bank accounts, you know, all the tax evasion there. He's the highest paid whistleblower in U.S. history, and he has a book that just came out this week, and I interviewed him, and the revelations that he has with what else they did, the Justice Department and the Obama and Clinton, is pretty damning as well. And, you know, Bill Clinton got...
Let's be clear about this. Julian Assange is not a fellow conservative.
He's not. I think he's more... And the person, the whistleblower, goes, I'm a Democrat. I don't even... You know,
so for this stuff to get out, and those folks leading the charge, they're looking at this from objective eyes and saying, I don't care if their ideology is in sync with mine. These people are bad news. And so,
well, that's what they're saying. But you know, the good point of that, there were people on the SEC, the IRS, and in the Senate that were really trying to make a difference. So not everybody is bad. There are people who are really trying to end this corruption in the system. They just need help.
Well, and I think Comey's probably one of those that's caught in the middle. I mean, I think the first investigation may have been, and who knows, we're all speculating, but may have been botched a bit. Now he gets this very incriminating evidence from the very bizarre and despicable case of Anthony Weiner. And he says, gosh, I've got a choice to make here. I can sit on this, and then if it pops up after the election, the whole country will say, why didn't you do something? Or I can do, I can kind of go back and put myself in an embarrassing position of reopening the investigation when I shouldn't have closed it the first time.
Well, and there's so many new things coming out. I mean, they already knew this stuff, though. I don't know. I never know what the motivations are. I hope he's honest. I hope it's a real deal and there's integrity behind that. I really do, because we got to weed out this corruption. We have to.
Well, okay. Corruption starts from money, government doling out money.
Yes, it does.
To be honest, that's where corruption starts. So if we went back to a more constitutional view of the federal government and more enumerated powers instead of unlimited government, you'd have less corruption.
So, okay. Yeah, and that's why it bothers me that people that think that way are suddenly made into bigots. It's like, okay, come on. There is no correlation between that line of thinking and bigotry. There might be bigots that think that way, but that doesn't correlate.
The whole identity politics and calling everybody this or that is just the last refuge of a scoundrel.
Yeah, it's awful. Well, let's talk about another big, huge issue. Where do you stand on our national debt problem? Do you ever think that can get paid off? And do you think there's a dollar reset on the horizon because it's so astronomical?
Well, there will be a run on the dollar if we don't get serious about the debt. That's the whole point. We're going to end up as a third world country because interest payments alone, if interest rates ever go back to their post-World War II norm, will swamp the budget. It'll be over $1 trillion. Right now it's $500 billion at a 10-year treasury of under 2%. The average post-World War II 10-year treasury is 5.7. If it ever even gets close to that, interest payments on the debt will be $1 trillion. And so all those people that have their handout and in the corporate welfare world and the modern welfare state won't have anything then because it'll all go.
Well, because that's the size of our complete budget.
Well, it's
right.
The size
isn't what's our whole budget size? Isn't it close to that?
The domestic discretionary budget is about $1 trillion.
Yes.
The whole budget is $4 trillion, over $4 trillion, because $3 trillion is built in, and some of that is most of that's entitlements. But the 12 appropriations bills that pass every year, govern the domestic discretionary budget, which is around $1.1 trillion.
That's what I mean. So that would all go away.
Yeah. So you've got to do something, and I don't know that you can completely grow out of this. The best thing we could do is have economic growth, but I don't know, given a $20 trillion debt and a $600 billion deficit, if that's enough. So I believe strongly in cuts. One of the reasons I feel so strongly about budget reductions, or I should say the Affordable Care Act, Sarah, is that would immediately save about $591 billion over the next 10 years, 2026. The civil service compensation, we now have 500,000 federal employees making over $100,000 a year.
Yeah, that's crazy.
2 million. The largest employer is the federal government, 2 million people. In the country, the single largest employer. And there are 500,000 of them, 25% that make over $100,000. You could save $30 billion with civil service reform on that. The food stamp program is now $75 billion. The SNAP program needs to be reformed. There are specific budget cuts out there, but I would argue that you need across-the-board cuts because you're never going to get one group to take a hit if the other groups don't. And I've been saying that for years and years. So this is about getting serious about the debt and making certain that everybody has skin in the game for the betterment of the country.
Well, we'll
call it shared sacrifice.
Well, we have to do something. It's crazy. I know the U.S. Competitive Council has some ideas on how to deal with the debt as well. They're a think tank that's a nonpartisan think tank that they counsel the White House and Congress on how to stay competitive globally. And they have, their members are university presidents and CEOs of large corporations, and they've been really working out some ideas as well. I just think that we have to get serious and get the smartest people we can find and get into and start working out some things.
Well, my opponent keeps talking about efficiencies and doing this, but we've heard that song for 30 years. Look, everybody had.
Well, you got to do that too. Yeah. You got to do everything. But go ahead. Yeah, but
you think you're going to solve a $20 trillion debt? No. Well, I'm going to eliminate waste, fraud, and abuse.
Well, you got to do that, but you also have to do yes.
That you've got the budget sequestration, or what they called the 2011 budget caps, were something that was actually working. It was reducing the debt quickly, but they undid it in December of 2015 because the insiders got together and said, "I'll undo your cuts if you undo mine."
That's awful.
My opponent has been hitting me for supporting that. That's a 2.5% reduction from these federal programs. There's 2.5% waste in every federal agency, most likely. So we know who is in favor of the 2011 budget caps. I was, and my opponent wasn't. So I'll make that pitch as well.
Let's talk about switching. Let's switch to the Federal Reserve topic. Do you think it's dangerous to have a private, non-transparent control entity controlling our money? I mean, do you think it should be audited? Where do you stand on that?
Well, I certainly think it should be audited, but I think what the Fed needs is a rule. It is dangerous to have people creating money and reflating these bubbles. As Austrian economists will tell you, you get an artificial boom and everybody thinks it's great until one day they wake up and their balance sheets look horrible and people are in debt and the whole thing pops. And we've gone through that with tech stocks. We went through it with real estate. We may be in the middle of a stock and bond bubble right now. So the Fed has been covering for bad fiscal policy. And you can't do that. Bad monetary policy can put you in a depression, but bad monetary policy can never get you out of one.
And but we audited it, and we found $16 trillion that they gave to foreign banks and different things. How do we know? I mean, they can do almost anything they want.
Because they can create fiat money with their own discretion. Just take a vote of the Board of Governors. If there was a rule for the Fed, now you can go back to a commodity standard, a pure gold standard, and that's the ultimate rule. You take away the central bank. Every money's backed by gold. If the money supply gets too high, people get nervous. They turn in their paper money and they get gold, and that automatically reduces the money supply. You can do that. Some critics in the monetarist school, the University of Chicago and others, will say, yeah, but that doesn't account for really strong growth because it holds it back. It can cause deflation. It doesn't account for times when you need a rapid expansion or something. But I would argue this, that I would settle, we'll call it Lewis's rule, but it's really kind of a knockoff on the Taylor rule. The Fed and the FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, which controls buying treasuries and to control the money supply and set interest rates, overnight rates, should never be able to have negative rates. So, for instance, if inflation is growing at 1.82%, we'll say, the overnight rate should never be below 2%. The inflation goes up to 3, the overnight rate has to be above 3. And that way, you never get this mass explosion of money that keeps inflation going. You get an automatic mechanism. And so if you had a hard monetary rule like that, it would take the discretion out of the Fed, which would limit it quite a bit.
Huh, I got to think about that more. You made me think of a different perspective. That's awesome. I love talking to people that give me a different way to look at it.
Well, okay, the other thing I want to do is read Humphrey Hawkins. You remember 1978, the famous Humphrey Hawkins bill that said the Fed has a dual mandate. One is a stable dollar, so your dollar tomorrow is worth what it was today, which is the real purpose of the Fed. But the other was to solve unemployment. That is not the Fed's job. You
No.
can't have the Fed doing both simultaneously.
Well, they can't anyways. They don't have the ability to.
Right.
Well, you can't do it with monetary policy alone.
That's right.
Right. Okay. Well, I know you're tight on time, but I wanted to talk about cybercrime real quick because this is a big issue. I just did a show on this, and what I found is that a recent U.S. military study by the Pentagon's chief weapon tester showed that almost nearly every U.S. weapons program showed significant vulnerabilities to cyber attacks. And also the majority of Americans have been their data has been compromised. So, I mean, we're in a situation where we have some major issues. What are your views on that?
Well, I think you're right about that. I was talking with some folks in the financial world not long ago, and that came out to be their number one issue. It's very scary. If the electric grid were to go down, banking institutions and all those electronic transfers were to be interrupted or blacked out. We're seeing the hacking of the emails. That's a form of this. So it is very, very scary. I'm not an expert in that field. I would like to take a look at it. Something clearly has to be done, but the mechanics of doing it is probably above my pay grade right now. So that's why you get elected, get the intelligence reports and see the options and learn. But it is definitely
but take it seriously and devote the resources we need, because I think we're focusing a lot of our stuff on traditional security measures when the world is changing so quickly and we need to evolve and change with it.
You couldn't be more correct. I mean, if you look at, well, there was a case where former Army Chief Odierno went to Congress and said, look, guys, we don't need any more Abrams tanks. We don't fight those kind of wars anymore. We don't need them. And we've got, I can't remember what the figure was. I think he said we already had 9,000. We aren't even using them. Congress immediately then went about appropriating more Abrams tanks.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And that's the kind of stuff they need to be educated too.
Well, a lot of it's pork, bringing
I know.
Yeah. A pork on domestic programs and these sorts of things as well. But the bottom
they
line
is keep selling it.
Seriously. And we need to be smarter in what we're doing, and we need to be smarter abroad. The idea now of, after Hillary made the mess in Egypt and Libya, and you can blame Bush for Iraq if you want. Now the idea that she's tinkering and saber rattling on going into Syria when we don't even know who the rebels are. Well, we do actually. They're ISIS members. That is the sort of silliness.
Well, and we just weren't serious about it either with the Russia coming in there and taking people out in a night. In 24 hours, they just came and took people out, and we were just dorking around. I mean, we have to get serious about it.
Well, we did help initially the Syrian rebels, and we found out that our arms and help was going to ISIS rebels.
Yes.
You've got Bashar al-Assad, who's runs a Shia government in a Sunni country. Is got a civil war in his hands. That's true. But he's fighting the people that are responsible for Brussels, Paris, San Bernardino, Nice, Orlando, you name it. And so we have to, you know, remember that great Churchillian doctrine, Sarah. If Hitler marched into hell, I'd find something nice to say about the devil. we can't be everything to everybody and fight both sides or three sides. We're broke.
We are. That's what I mean. We have 1,200 bases around the world. I mean, we got to get smarter.
Yeah, then we got to get smarter.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you, I'm sure you heard this, but we took out Iran's nuclear facilities. It was cyber warfare. We blew up their centrifuges. And then they found out there's a anonymous NSA agents have come forward in this movie that was put out, Zero Days, and explain the whole situation. And they're really trying to let people know about cybercrime. And then they believe it's the number one threat that we have. And
they may very well be correct on that.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. But now, where can people see more about you and what your issues that you stand for? Are you going to be at some events over the next week, or what can they do?
Well, we've already had the Almanac debate. That's online. You just go to Almanac and click the debate there between myself and my opponent. But they can go to jasonlewis2016.com. JasonLewis2016.com. We've got a very, very long, extraordinary long for a candidate for Congress issues page that I think people like you would like. And I didn't want to be just a routine politician that doesn't say anything. I wanted to actually stand for something and do the right thing here. So against the wishes of some of my advisors, I said, no, I'm putting down the issues in my website and we're going to stand for these things. So go
I
to
love
Jason.
That. That's what we need.
I think so too. And I think you'll like it. So JasonLewis2016.com, and you can help there too.
And I'll put it up on my website and the radio page, and people know about it. So great. Thank you so much, and good luck over the next week.
Sarah, thank you so much, and keep doing what you're doing. It's very important, helping those young kids evolve and become very productive citizens and lead great American lives. That's the whole purpose here.
Love it. Love teaching at the U. Okay, well, great. Well, thank you so much. Have a great day.
All right, Sarah. Thank you.
And that's the end of our interview. I thought that was very fun talking to him. As you can see, he's really smart and he thinks differently. And I love that. I love that the fact that he will dig in and figure out what the best is to get done. And I know he's into less government. And a lot of people think government is the answer for things. And in some cases, it really is. But look at my website on the radio page. I'm going to put that chart back up there on what's going on with healthcare, and you can see why healthcare has gotten so expensive in this country. It's because the administration and government costs are out of control, and that one chart shows you why we really have to keep government under control in the sense of not getting out of hand. We don't want them to grow too big because then we can't afford it. That one chart shows you how unwieldy government programs and government structure can turn something into something we can't afford. It can destroy a whole industry. And that's what's going on in healthcare. And just look at it. It's one image. It's really obvious. So go to my website, sarahwestall.com, and you'll see that chart there and contact information for Jason Lewis and all my shows. So sarahwestall.com. And for now, I hope everyone has a great day.
You've been listening to Business Game Changers with host Sarah Westall. Tune in each Monday at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern, as Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in Mondays at 12 noon Pacific time and learn more about Sarah at sarahwestall.com today.